present Slaughter in the Dark by Marius Brill, with Paul B. Davis as Jack Dunrudy and Rebecca Front as Terry Moore. Episode 2, Done to Death.
Listen. Welcome inside my head. You know, when you're blind, every day looks the same. And in this darkness I call my home, there are many ghosts, sounds.
Jack, are you awake?
Noises.
Come on, Jack, your door's locked.
Voices.
Are you all right?
That morning was too cold, too loud, and too late. It was the afternoon. After the Sasha D'Amour case, I went out celebrating. Ghosts. The only spirits I was aware of were 80% proof and still in my bloodstream.
You haven't hurt yourself, have you?
Good dog, good dog.
Please, Jack.
Listen. Can you come back some other time? I've got terrible flu. Really, really catching.
Poor thing. Oh, let me in. You need help.
Hold on a second. I'm just going to close the window.
Jack, you tried that one last week.
I'm sorry. I've been working pretty hard.
Don't worry. I know what it's like to be up to the eyeballs. Oh, I'm sorry. I didn't mean... Do you see? Oh, sorry. Well... Look at this place. It's in a complete state.
Listen, underneath the stains, the papers, the butts, the dust, the grime and the stray pot noodles, there is a spotlessly clean office.
I mean, how could you take anyone seriously who cites Barbie as her role model? The angst of urban depravity could be solved by Ken, Goodwill and biodegradable toilet paper. She came to read me books and things. When I said Barbie, I was referring to Klaus. Well, at least she never tried to sell me financial planning or religious salvation.
Jack, I'm going down to my folks' place this weekend, and I know it sounds awfully silly, but there's this old tale about a ghost. Ugh, just thinking about it makes the hairs on the back of my neck stand up.
That's your nylon polo neck, Terry.
I'd really like you to come with me.
So you can keep an eye on me. I'd rather be immersed in a vat of tepid semolina. I'd rather have an insurance salesman to stay and discuss the relative values of financial investment.
Oh, suit yourself. I hope you have a really miserable weekend.
Ooh.
Oh, hello.
Who is it?
It looks like a religious man. And there's someone just coming up in a suit.
My name is Thelonious, a monk, and I want to talk to you about saving...
Curiously enough, so do I. My name is Nigel Wavers. I represent the IM Insurance and Investment Group.
Excuse me, young man. I am on an errand of God. I think I have the priority. These sinners...
No. Taking out an insurance policy now would greatly benefit you later. None of us know...
What are you sniggering about?
I'm just waiting for the tepid semolina.
Look, are you sure your folks won't mind me turning up like this?
No, of course not. They love visitors. You're my guest, and I'm sure everybody will be pleased.
Terry, so glad you could make it. Oh, I see you brought a friend.
Hi, Valerie, this is Jack.
Oh, do be good. Call me Mummy. The twins do.
That's because you are their mummy. Jack's one of the people I work with. Jack, this is Valerie, my stepmother.
Nice to meet you.
How nice. One of Terry's people. And just what is your particular disability?
Discretion was not the better part of Valerie. She called a spade, a heart, and a club was something to bludgeon with.
I'm blind.
Oh, you carry it well. I wouldn't have known. Terry's here. And look, she's brought a friend. And guess what? He's almost normal.
Tell sweetheart, good to see you.
Bobby, still wearing that old jumper I made you. Oh, Jack, this is Robert, my brother.
Eye problem, right? Jack. Like that. Good name. Can't lengthen it. Can't shorten it.
You can't do much with it. A bit like your brain, Bob.
Hello.
Hi. Mark. My name's Mark. It's about time we had someone else around here whose disability wasn't a severe psychological one.
You're disabled?
Can't walk. Never could. Born with it. Live in this electric chair. Stuck more firmly than Pavarotti's piles on a portaloo. And if it wasn't for my self-sacrificing heroic sister helping me cope...
Your twin, right?
My twin. Identical in every way, except one slight difference. Her legs work. Mary. Mary, come over here and meet Jack.
Oh, hi.
Well, go on. Tell him how I depend on you for everything. Tell him about our life together, how I've grown up with you looking after me, how you shave me and bathe me. Tell him what a good person you are.
I've met some people with chips on their shoulders, but this guy had the whole King Edward.
I think I'll go and talk to Terry.
Yes. Go swap some knitting patterns, have a really good giggle.
Marky, sure you should be smoking?
Smells like Havana.
Close. It's Cuban.
Wasn't Picasso one of those?
That's Cubist, Bob.
Oh, sorry, I didn't mean to offend.
You utter bitch! It's true!
What is?
I was doing our family tree. It's just, well, Daddy was never actually married to their mother.
She's making our Bob and I some sort of...
Broken family?
It doesn't make any difference. He's dead and you're part of the family now.
Oh, and I get to stay on in my own house out of the goodness of your heart.
Oh, Terry,
quiet, everybody, quiet. Who your father was married to is none of your business. Never forget, he was a kind man.
The kind of man who doesn't marry.
Shut up, Bob.
Any more for any more?
Who's going to stay up to see the ghost?
Just whose ghost is it?
John Donne.
Oh, the poet. The metaphysical one.
It's all rubbish.
It isn't. It's true. Remember what happened to old Uncle Fatty when the ghost came? One moment he was puffing away, the next he was flat out.
Uncle Fatty had a dodgy heart. He could have gone any time.
What about their Auntie Maud? She died of suffocation.
Auntie Maud was under your Uncle Fatty at the time.
Would somebody tell me what this ghost is supposed to do?
There is this legend that on his deathbed, as blood seeped from his cracked lips, John Donne, the famous poet, cursed our family, the family of his wife, Anne Moore. Why? Well, many years before, on the day Anne was to wed Donne, he was imprisoned by her father, our great-great-great great-grandfather, or Sir George Moore, as he was known. Sir George couldn't keep Donne in that dark dungeon, but refused them her dowry. He not only cut Anne out of his will, but forbade anything of the poet's to ever enter the house. Even to this day, you will find nothing. Even his entry in the encyclopedia has been ripped out. But every year, at the stroke of midnight, on the night of his wedding day, John Donne returns to fulfill his curse and haunt these cold stones. And it is said that if one of the family is soon to die, a pool of blood drips onto that mantelpiece. Perhaps already you can hear the gentle drip, drip, drip of blood.
I always knew he was metaphysical.
I thought that meant he was just good at sports.
Mary's been waiting for some blood to appear.
Haven't you, eh?
Look, I've got a headache. It's all this rain. I'm going upstairs to hit the sack. Night, Mary.
I'm going to have to go and feed Watson.
Let's all go and freshen up. Everybody be back here 10 to midnight.
I say, Draggleman, just a quick word before you go.
What is it?
Well, I'd like to introduce you to a really great insurance policy. And the great thing is, it's pyramid. When you buy one, you can make...
I hadn't experienced a night that wet since puberty. The courtyard was flooding.
Hey, look what I've got for you, boy. Lassie meaty chunks.
I know.
You wish it was a meaty chunky lassie. Damn, you've made me drop my cigs.
I was in one crazy place, murdering ghosts and a family with a chromosome imbalance rivaling the Windsors. Families, they make you feel like bad food. They're really not satisfied until they've brought you up.
Bloody waste of time. Bloody. Get it?
Shut up, Bob.
Oh, I can't bear the tension.
I don't believe it.
No.
What is it? What's happening?
Blood. There's blood dripping onto the mantelpiece.
Look at the ceiling. It's coming through the ceiling.
Ah, it's the curse. One of us is going to die.
Calm down. Someone's playing a trick. Ah. Let's go upstairs.
Come on, upstairs. Quick.
Quick. Oh, look. There's blood on the stairs.
Won't somebody help me? I can't get up there on my own.
Please. Don't worry. We'll come back in a moment.
The bedroom was awash with a stale odour of blood. The carpet saturated. I passed my hands over the still warm, untorn contours of her face as she lay on her side.
Oh, God, it's Mary.
Blood still bubbled and belched out of her ear. Apart from that, I could feel no heartbeat, no breath, and no wounds. It was as if her brain had burst inside her head. We left her body where it was, locked the door and tried to call the police. Of course, in the flooding, the lines were down. We were stuck in the house, and we all knew that unless there was a vengeful ghost, one of us was a murderer.
It was horrible. All that blood pouring out of her ear.
And there were absolutely no other wounds?
No.
You seem very calm, Mrs. Moore, for someone who's just lost a daughter.
I'm never very good first thing in morning.
Now, Terry, what were you doing?
Hang on. Who made you detective?
Well, someone's got to do it.
You can find a murderer in Broadmoor. What were you doing after dinner?
Hold on. Why don't we vote and elect a detective?
What shall we do, Terry?
Terry, a detective? She was about as in touch with reality as Lord Lucan is with his local constabulary. If her eyes ever lit up, it was probably because someone was shining a torch in her ear. Finally, she said we should...
All get to bed, lock your doors, and I'll talk to everyone one by one in the morning.
You'd be pushed to make a thicker solution with flour and water. There was a murder, and somewhere a murderer. I was determined to get to the bottom of this faster than an Italian's hand. When the house was quiet, I gently felt my way to Mary's room. I slipped my credit card. Wow, no wonder they called it an access card. I can still feel the scab of that blood-encrusted carpet, the sickening congealed pool as it lapped about her short hair, dry clots clinging to each strand. My fingers dragged the shag pile. Beneath her ear, the carpet was sharply indented, as if a sharp object had protruded from her ear as she fell. Of course, Sometimes I can be dumber than a Trappist monk with laryngitis. A long, thin, sharp object had been thrust in one ear and out of the other, piercing the brain. Someone coming. There was only one door. I groped the room for a hiding place. A key in the lock. The doorknob swivelling. I scoured the oak panelling. When you're blind and something spins you very quickly, your balance is as dodgy as a Dixon's stereo. I fell to the ground in the cool quiet of a passageway. It must have been some secret swivelling panel. On the other side, I could hear somebody searching Mary's room, the one I'd spun out of. In this now unfamiliar darkness, I followed the rough walls. The slight tingling whisper of spiders' webs clung to my face as I edged along. Dead end. There had to be a way out.
Oh, Jack, you came. How did you get in? You got my note?
Yes. Who would send a note to a blind man? The only sort of note I recognise is a musical one. Crisp and in pounds sterling.
And, you feel it too?
Often, yes.
Oh, Jack, give me your hand. Look at me. Oh, well, feel it. Shaking like a leaf. All this murder, I don't know if I can really cope. I know we haven't been great friends, but, well, I just thought we could be something more.
Terry, I think I know what you're saying, and I don't think it would work.
Oh, you're such a cynic. Do you know what I say? I say if you scratch a cynic, you'll just find a bruised romantic.
A real cynic will never let you close enough to scratch.
Shh. Just put your hand here. What do you feel?
Well, it's very soft.
And feel this with your fingers.
Well, that bit, I must say, is very hard, firm.
But what do you feel? The whole thing.
Well, it's hairy.
To you, Jack, it's only a teddy bear. But to me, it's my teddy bear. I'm very, very attached to it. You're something like that. I feel very, very attached to you. Jack, how come you've never touched my face? Touch it. Touch it now. Find out what I look like.
I don't know what beautiful women in magazines are like. They all feel the same. Glossy. But Terry, she was warm and soft. If there is a beautiful when you're blind. If there is. This was it. My heart felt like a negligent greengrocer. It missed a beat. I felt my cauliflower and my artie choked.
Oh, I'm going to go to the bathroom. Just stay there. Watch out you don't sit on my crochet.
I don't know about my trousers, but I could hardly contain myself. I leaned back, feeling a whole new world opening up in front of me. Terry was no bad kid. As I leant, I felt the jab of her knitting needle, probably making some more of her sharp corner cosies for me. I removed the thin needle. The long, thin, sharp needle. I felt around for the other one. It was missing. It hit me harder than a low branch when taking Watson for a run. A needle was sharp enough and long enough to run through one ear and out of the other. The other needle was probably lying blood-soaked somewhere. She must have known I was onto something. I thought of her in the bathroom, unscrewing her lady shave, extracting the razor. It was sharp. So was my exit.
Oh, morning, Jack.
Morning, Mark.
Watch your cock.
I've already checked my flies, Bob.
The other's not up?
I haven't seen Mother yet.
Terry's still in her room.
What's the weather look like?
The rain's stopped.
Water's still about a foot deep.
How do you feel, Mark?
Well, I went to bed last night, slept. Must have got about 5, maybe 6 seconds.
Any ideas who might have done something like this?
Somebody who won't be alive much longer.
You don't believe the ghost story, then?
No. Patrick Swayze was too unbelievable, and Whoopi Goldberg really wasn't convincing.
Shut up, Bob.
Look, I've got a few things I think I'll ask Valerie. I think I'll go and check if she's up. Mrs. Moore? Valerie? Valerie?
The room was emptier than John Major's life. Then I remembered the person who had nearly found me in Mary's room the night before. Mary's door was unlocked. I went in and approached Mary's body. Oh! I would have got there if it wasn't for the other body I tripped over. The face, hard. My fingers traced crow's feet, thin lips, thick hair. Valerie, dead as a Saturday night in Basingstoke. Mother and daughter lay there, side by side.
Hello there! Oh, gosh. Is she all right?
She's dead.
Ah, that's a bit of bad luck. It's a good thing I'm insured.
Being insured is hardly going to keep you alive when you've got a knitting needle forced from one ear to the other. Mind you, it'd probably miss your brain.
It's a brilliant policy. If you die before you're 30, you get £1 million.
And what would you do with £1 million when you're dead?
Spend it, stupid.
How old was Mary?
29.
Who sold you your policy?
Well, I'm glad you asked me. I can get you a wonderful deal from which I make a small percentage, and any future custom you bring...
It was Mark, wasn't it?
Yes, but if you buy the policy from me...
Yes, Mary bought one of my policies. They say you should interest your family and friends first.
And who was the money going to?
She nominated a benefactor.
Who was?
I'm not allowed to say.
Who was it?
Look, don't bother. I'm not telling you.
10 years, I think, aiding and abetting.
Terry. It was Terry.
Terry? Why?
I don't know. Mary always wanted a sister. A nice, able sister, not a half-dead brother like me. They were close.
Maybe things got too close. Opportunity, weapon, and now motive. I'm not talking about a few drowned Weetabix. Terry was a serial killer.
Bob?
What's up, Jack, old man?
Have you seen Terry?
She just left. She said she was going to try to wade to the police station.
Terry! Stop!
Jack!
Just hold on.
What are you doing out here? After last night... Oh, God, how embarrassing. Well, after last night, I thought you'd never want to see me. I mean, hear me again.
Thought you'd get away. Well, I've got a surprise.
Oh, sweet! A bracelet! Handcuffs. Don't you think this is a bit open for this sort of thing? I mean... Can't we do this in the privacy of the bedroom?
Great idea. I'll lock you in your room and go and get the police.
Oh, I was just going to the police myself.
Of course you were.
Jack, you don't think I did it, do you?
She claimed she was innocent, but then so did a whole bunch of medieval popes. I took the cuffs and locked her in her bedroom. Suddenly I felt like an oil reserves conference. I had a bad case of the shakes. I needed a smoke. My cigarettes had been ruined in the rain. I went downstairs to Mark's room, but no one was around. I felt about in his bedside drawer and found one of his fancy cigars. Strange cigar. It was firm but light. Didn't smell of anything. Still, short of licking the motorway, it was the only way I was going to get my tar fix. I flicked my Zippo and I felt the heat of the flame near my brow. Smoking takes a bit of a knack when you're blind. Tasted like it had a filter. But really strange, I could feel a little string on my tongue. Yeah. I spat it out and stamped the thing. That was no cigar. What was Mark doing with that, unless he wasn't who I thought he was? If Mark wasn't Mark, who was? I rushed to Mary's room. I circled Valerie's body. I put my hand on Mary's face. As I suspected, it was at least 12 hours since her murder, and on it was a fresh crop of stubble. Either Mary was the kind of dame who shaved, or this corpse wasn't hers. Oh.
Guess I hadn't been paying attention. Now I was seeing more stars than a bumper edition of Hello. I couldn't move my hands. Ropes. There was a dizzying odour of petrol burning in my nostrils.
Oh, Jack. You've woken up just in time. Bob's still out cold.
I knew it was you from the start. You were too similar to your brother. You killed him and then posed as him, didn't you? Mary.
Well, I spent so many years shaving him, bathing him and clothing him. It was the least I could do when he died.
With your knitting needle in his brain.
That was nothing. Nothing to the torture he put me through. You don't understand the emotional blackmail, the never-ending self-pity. He would never release me.
And your mother?
She only cared for Mark.
You don't think you're going to get away with this?
What? Who would suspect the only survivor of a terrible fire caused by a bungling blind man?
My lighter.
Don't worry. In a few minutes, you'll be much lighter. You and everyone else in this dump.
Hold on. What's happened?
Oh, Jack. One minute I was in this creepy passage and the next thing the wall spins and I'm in here.
Let me out. Let me out.
Great timing. Mary must have been standing too close to the panel.
Mary?
Let me out.
Is that Mary shouting? She's alive?
Yeah, with a panel between her and the petrol. Quick, untie me.
Jack, so you do like those games?
I still can't believe you thought I was the murderer.
Well, I found only one crochet needle. It seemed obvious.
You only use one needle to crochet, stupid.
Well, I'll be darned. I take it you knew about that secret passage all along.
No, but when you locked me in, I was looking for a way out. I thought I might climb out of the window when the most curious thing happened. I heard a bell ring behind the secret panel. I pushed it and ended up in the passage.
A bell? What do you think rang it? Who? Why?
I don't know. I didn't ask for whom it told. It told for me.
Done.
No, more like dong.
No, Dunn. John Dunn, the ghost.
The ghost? Oh, it couldn't have been. Do you think it wanted to save our lives?
Ultimately, that was probably its goal. Come in, Terry. I think we deserve a drink.
Hello. Remember me? Nigel Wavers, IM Insurance Group. Me and the monk thought we would wait for you. Are you ready to consider the benefits of an insurance policy?
Look, I bought this insurance policy. Apparently there's a pyramid that I'm now a part of. Like the Egyptians. You could buy a policy from me.
Yes, and thanks to my friend here, I have been brought the good news. Now I can not only assure this life, but one in the hereafter. I have become Super Insurer.
Just the people I wanted to see.
In episode 2 of Slaughter in the Dark by Marius Brill, Paul B. Davis was Jack Dunrudy and Rebecca Front, Terry Moore. David Holt was Watson the dog and Nigel Wavers, the insurance man. Judy Parfitt was Valerie and Jane Wittenshaw was Mark and Mary. Bob, Peter Yap and Thelonious the monk, David Collings. Slaughter in the Dark is directed by Andy Jordan.